This is part 10 of Your Life is Their Toy, Merchants in Medicine, by Emmanuel Josephson, MD, from 1948. In more advanced cases that show marked muscle changes, no success followed this therapy until wheat germ oil, vitamin E, or A. tocopherol were added. It was then learned that materially greater improvement could be obtained also in the early cases by the addition of those substances. A study of the creatine output in the urine revealed that these cases show a relatively high loss, which rises with the administration of glycocol. I was able to confirm observations previously made on the effect of A. tocopherol in raising the renal threshold of creatine and reducing its loss from the body in the urine. The influence of the various forms of vitamin E on the muscles is readily explainable on the basis of the importance of creatine and its compounds in muscular activity. The response of the early cases of myasthenia gravis to the therapy without vitamin E is due to the fact that the threshold is not sufficiently lowered to deplete the muscles of the creatine provided by the glycocol and the diet. When the threshold drops to a point so low that insufficient creatine is retained for muscular activity, extreme forms of the disease develop. The response of both myasthenia gravis and muscular dystrophy to the therapy indicates that they are different stages of the same condition. It also appears probable that the role of the vitamin in preserving fertility may depend on its influence on the muscular factors involved in the procreative function. The vitamin E also plays an important role in the function of heart muscle and in the prevention of myocardial disease. An increase of the diseases due to vitamin E deficiency in the diet is a natural consequence of its elimination from the diet as a result of the denaturing of foods. It is probable that there exists a wide array of subclinical conditions characterized by modern degrees of muscular weakness and fatigue as a consequence of this deficiency. Serious consideration should be given to restoring to universal use in the diet sources rich in vitamin E, such as freshly ground and unprocessed grains, in the interest of preserving both vigor and fertility of the race. E. M. Josephson, M.D. Nature indicated medical censorship by rejecting the report with the suggestion that it, quote, would appear more appropriately in a medical journal, unquote. Dr. J. McKean Cattell, editor of Science, returned the report with the statement that it had been rejected by a referee, the American Medical Association censor, that passes on all articles pertaining to medicine that are submitted for publication. The referee was reported by him to have characterized this succinct report of an important discovery based on several years of study and a wealth of clinical material as, quote, an uncritical, uncontrolled clinical study with a number of speculative statements and therefore not suited to science, unquote. Confirmatory report is published. The questionable judgment or sincerity of referee and editor is made clear by the fact that within 1 week after the long-delayed rejection of the report, Its contents were fully confirmed by an article by Dr. Franklin Bicknell, which appeared in Lancet. Science, and Watson Davis's Science Service, carried a full-length report of the work of Dr. Bicknell a few weeks after it had rejected my paper. In this manner does the Holy Office of the Inquisition of Medical Science operate. It confirms the ugliest predictions made by Watson Davis. It is a measure of the corruption, chicanery, and medievalism which has crept into science. On further study of myasthenia gravis, I found that vitamin E is effective in treating the disease up to the most advanced stage. In the final stage of the disease, the mineral manganese must be administered in combination with the vitamin E. The tumor of the thymus gland, thymoma, which frequently develops in the advanced stage of the disease and may be fatal in its consequences, clears up completely under the action of the manganese, as does the rest of the disease process. When manganese treatment is stopped, the thymoma and the other signs and symptoms of myasthenia gravis return, and the patient suffers a relapse, which again clears up when manganese treatment is resumed. The influence of the dietary treatment with manganese on the tumor of the thymus gland led me to study the influence of manganese on other enlargements of the thymus gland, such as those which occur in certain infants and children, and in status lymphaticus that threatens life. These enlargements respond to the administration of manganese and clear up completely so long as the patients get enough manganese. When the amount of manganese which they get becomes insufficient, the enlargement returns. These studies have opened up a fundamental and important new chapter in medicine. They reveal that the thymus has much the same relation to the utilization of manganese as the thyroid has to iodine. Despite the life-saving and scientific importance of this discovery, it was rejected for publication by the leading medical publications, including the Journal of the AMA, the Endocrinology, and others, on the grounds that, quote, it would not be of interest to our readers, unquote. Science does not stop, however, with the politically dictated suppression of publication of reports of scientific discovery. It also suppresses advertisements of scientific books which the American Medical Association seeks to repress. It is amusing to consider that the perpetrator of this breach of freedom of speech and publication is none other than the professor who was ousted from Columbia University with his son because of the latter's insistence on freedom of speech in encouraging resistance to draft during the World War, and who was enabled to publish science by the support of friends gained by a plea for freedom of speech in science. Another of numerous such incidents was the deliberate discrediting by organized medicine of the masterful work of Professor Swingle of Princeton University, in which he and collaborators proved that deficiency of the adrenal cortex underlies surgical shock. Almost a decade later, March 12, 1940, widespread publicity was given to the quote-unquote discovery of this fact by Dr. David Perla of the Montefiore Hospital by organized medicine. A partial explanation of the situation may be found in the fact that Swingle used his own American preparation of the hormone, while the Perla experiments publicized the product patented by the Rockefeller German dye trust interests. As so often happens when organized medicine seeks profit or revenge, Swingle, the discoverer, was discredited, and credit for the discovery has been given to an imitator or corroborator. To what extremes this vindictive suppression of scientific work is carried is illustrated by the fact that in the bibliography of the subject included in the advertising matter of the sharing company, based on this use of adrenal cortex hormone, no mention is made of Swingle's basic work. The content of such advertising literature is censored by the AMA Council. These incidents illustrate the quote-unquote principle which enters censorship of medical publication, show how it is used by medical politicians to cover themselves with glory with the work of others, demonstrate the possibilities which it offers for the theft of medical discoveries, and portray the injury done thereby to the public. AMA censorship of advertising. The control of advertising columns of the lay press is of utmost importance to the AMA for the success of its testimonial and other rackets. This, quote, zone of influence, unquote, is left for the present entirely to the AMA gang by the social service racket. The stranglehold of the AMA on the drug trade has been intensified by its success in imposing a censorship of medical advertising on a majority of the country's magazines and newspapers. The censorship of advertising has been attained at an enormous cost to the publishers of newspapers and magazines. For in the heyday of journalism, patent medicine advertising was one of the principal sources of their revenue. Some of the advertising was absurd and quackish, but much of it was less damaging to the health and interests of the public than are some of the advertisements that regularly appear in the journals of the American Medical Association and under its quote-unquote seal of acceptance. The tactics that were employed by the AMA to gain this censorship were varied. They brought into play the full measure of unscrupulousness, shrewdness, chicanery, and other less honorable aptitudes of the gang. The situation serves to expose the Fourth Estate, the proprietors and editors of the lay publications, as naive babes in the woods, as compared with their benevolent adversaries of the quote-unquote testimonial rackets. The first bait laid for the lay publishers was quote-unquote reliable medical news of the AMA brand. Their sympathies were played upon by pathetic tales of how readers were preyed upon by hobgoblin manufacturers of pharmaceuticals who had not purchased the testimonials of the AMA. The publishers were bombarded with letters of victims or pretended victims of the products under AMA fire as a part of the campaign to gain the censorship which was sought. Naturally, the victims of quote-unquote accepted products, which have the seal of the association, were discreetly left out of the picture. Federal agencies abet AMA. Federal agencies have been consistently used by the American Medical Association as cat's paws and pawns in their commercial censorship war. There is no question, for instance, of what one would find if one traced the source of the recent complaints filed with the Federal Trade Commission against the Advertising and the Institute of Good Housekeeping magazine. Well-paid articles by Morris Fishbein since then have graced the Hearst magazines, and the AMA and its subsidiaries are emerging as censors of the Hearst newspapers, as is made clear by the illustrated letter from the New York Journal and American. On April Fool's Day, 1940, Fishbein attained a goal for which he had striven for several years, since he had broken off with the NEA. He began his career of columnist for Hearst's King Features Syndicate under the headline, quote, "Medicine in the News," unquote. The Federal Trade Commission and other governmental agencies are singularly deaf to any complaints lodged against false and misleading advertisements and publications of the American Medical Association and its bosses. Thus, several complaints were lodged with the FTC against the fraudulent and quackish advertising and the dangerously misleading text of Dr. Morris Fishbein's Modern Home Medical Advisor. They fell on deaf ears. Complaints lodged against the AMA and its journal for false and misleading advertising, monopoly in restraint of trade, and other illegal practices were investigated and confirmed by the Congressional Committee of the 72nd Congress. But so great is the influence of the AMA that, as has been related, it has never been prosecuted. When under investigation, the AMA poses as a quote-unquote benevolent and quote-unquote educational organization and makes no mention of its rich commercial and racketeering activities. Better Business Bureaus abet AMA. The devices that are effectively used by the AMA in its war for control of the nation's press are recounted in the decision of the U.S. Court of Appeals, Sixth Circuit, in the case of Raladam Company versus the Federal Trade Commission, handed down June 28, 1930. It reads, quote, "The record here shows, without dispute or by implication, which would hardly be denied, that the American Medical Association is engaged in a campaign against those proprietary remedies which it believes ought to be used by the public, either not at all or only under supervision. It has a bureau for that and other purposes, and the bureau employs a director. When it is thought that a particular advertisement should be stopped, this director takes the matter up with the Federal Trade Commission and with the Association of Better Business Bureaus, which are scattered over the country. Thereupon, the commission, if it approves, files a complaint, and eventually, if it is convinced of the truth of its complaint, makes the order to desist and refrain. The Better Business Bureaus explain to their local newspapers and to the general periodicals that it would be wise to refuse this advertising. The chairman of the commission, in public addresses and in correspondence, advises the newspapers that they will be subject to prosecution by the commission as defendants, to be joined with the advertisers if they do not desist from such publications. And the newspapers may suspect that if they do not comply with the advice of the Better Business Bureaus, their general advertising patronage from the membership of these bureaus will fall off. Unquote. Vitamin Products Company libeled by BBB. Another case that illustrates the methods of this malodorous alliance is that of the Vitamin Products Company, one of the pioneer marketers of vitamins. Alert, progressive, and far ahead of its times, the company distributes with its products literature that describes the clinical results that can be obtained with vitamins. Persons who inquired of the AMA about the value of vitamins were falsely informed that vitamins have not been proved to have any clinical value, and that the claims to that effect by Vitamin Products Company were unfounded. Copies of these letters were forwarded by the AMA to the Better Business Bureau of Milwaukee. Firms with which the company sought to do business, on inquiring of the Better Business Bureau, were given this false and libelous data. Eventually, the Vitamin Products Company got wind of this libel and slander and brought suit against the Bureau. The AMA, instead of standing by its ally, denied any knowledge of the matter. The Better Business Bureau of Milwaukee has acknowledged its malefactions. Pending the fixing of the extent of the damages it has done to the business of Vitamin Product Company, the Bureau has undertaken to limit its liability by reorganizing, thus demonstrating one of the questionable methods of business which it is supposedly organized to combat. Advertising censorship dooms press. This statement by the court of how the FTC acts as a pawn and subsidiary of the American Medical Association in the conduct of its rackets explains how the latter has obtained its censorship of the press by officially supported intimidation. With this censorship, the AMA is dooming magazines and newspapers to death from lack of advertising revenue. As favored advertising media, the AMA journals, including the magazine Hygieia, are waxing constantly richer on the revenues derived from a monopoly of medical advertising won by the racketeering methods described. Since the AMA has not yet entered the radio advertising and broadcasting business on a serious scale, the broadcasting companies are still permitted to put on the air advertisements which have been barred in the newspapers, thus hastening the destruction of the press. It is hard to understand why publishers have not awakened to realize how they have been intimidated and duped by this AMA racket. And this concludes part 10 of Your Life is Their Toy, Merchants in Medicine, from Emmanuel Josephson, M.D., from 1948.